That's the spirit.
Come in, Professor Peter Lynham.
Hello, how are you going today on this wet day?
Oh, it started raining. We can't see outside the window here.
It is.
Oh,
I'm now cycling down Ponsonby Road.
Yes.
It's not coming down very heavily, but, you know, it's a bit wet. Yeah.
Oh, well, good
now,
for the garden.
Now, Johnny, I've got a little PS to last week about Buddhism in Japan.
Yes.
I was so intrigued to discover in something I read during the week that Christianity is doing a phenomenal trade at the moment in Japan for marriages. And they're, you know, Christianity is very weak in Japan. And would you believe it? They're hiring in clergy from real Anglican and Catholic churches and building replica cathedrals in Japan just so they can do the full works marriage.
The wedding.
I mean, yeah, that's right.
Okay.
The glamour of a wedding apparently needs Christian paraphernalia.
Okay.
So that's very extraordinary. I mean, I wonder if it's got something to do with the fact, I know years ago, there were some New Zealand churches that were quite popular with Japanese to fly over here and get married.
Yeah.
But looks like now they're importing them all into Japan.
Oh, interesting.
Well, it's a very entrepreneurial move, I'd have to say.
I guess, yeah. A lot of money associated with weddings, and I suppose if you can milk it any other way.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Most certainly. Mm. Most certainly. Mm. Anyway, that was certainly not the theme that I was thinking of for today. Because, of course, like everybody else, I was just horrified to hear of Salman Rushdie being stabbed at the literary conference he was speaking at on Friday.
And now, Salman Rushdie is the author of The Satanic Verses.
That's right.
A book which came out in the 80s?
Yes, it was. 1988
out. Is it one of the most controversial fictional publications of all time, would you say?
I would say not at all. The
not
odd
at all.
Thing is, yes, I mean, it's a very literary work. If you wanted to find it horrifying, for a start, you'd have to read. It's a very beautiful but convoluted style that it uses.
Mm-hmm.
And the really controversial bits are well into the centre of the book.
Yeah.
And you probably wouldn't pick them as controversial.
It's just a work of fiction, correct?
It is completely a work of fiction. It's about two Indians, and we have to remember that Rushdie is an Indian in background himself, and these two Indians are on a hijacked plane flying from India to London, and it crash lands into the English Channel, and they then go off on these astonishing journeys where one turns into the Archangel Gabriel and avoids dying through growing wings, and the other turns into the devil and avoids it with other techniques, you understand?
Mm-hmm.
And so from this literary fiction, it's exquisitely written. I reread the opening chapter today just to remind myself of what a beautiful novel it is. But it's quite hard going. It won the Booker Prize, but that doesn't mean to say that it's... I mean, many Booker Prize successes are a little bit obscure in some
yes.
way.
Yes, yeah.
And that's its style. So it's by no means James Joyce's Ulysses, for example.
Mm-hmm.
It's not deliberately written to be offensive. And that's the important thing to say, because the way in which the story has revolved around the way the book is written, it's clear that the people who accused it and issued the fatwa against it probably had never read the book.
Yes. I mean, but so Salman Rushdie, since the book was published, has essentially had a hit out on him
Iran, basically.
From Iran, yeah.
Although, you know, it's probably quite popular in many Muslim sources, in both Shiite and Sunni background, Muslims. But certainly, the Ayatollah Khomeini, who was the dominant figure who had brought down the Shah of Iran, issued the fatwa. And so he urged every faithful Muslim to seek war and to kill Salman Rushdie.
Mm-hmm.
and as recently as 2016, the money available to go to the person who successfully killed them was increased.
Yes.
Again, proportionately. And so great offence is created by the book, but for what reason? Well, this is so interesting. We have to go back to the original biographies of Muhammad. So the biographies of Muhammad are not written at the time that Muhammad lived. They're written in the 10th century. So that's two or three centuries after the death of Muhammad. And they're generally regarded by historians as not necessarily a very reliable source to Muhammad's life. But they presumably incorporate a lot of folk stories about Muhammad. And a critical story that has caused all the offence is really, really very surprising to find in a Muslim work. For it tells the story of Muhammad calling upon three goddesses of Arabia to assist him in a struggle that he's having with evil. Now, I mean, you understand that Islam is the purest of the monotheistic religions. There is no god but God.
So to call on some outside goddesses to help you out is completely blasphemous. You can't do that.
It is absolutely blasphemous.
Yep.
And yet there it sits in the Islamic literature, which is always resorted to by Muslims for the biography of Muhammad. And so what on earth is it doing there? And really nobody has ever solved this mystery. It could well be that, well, it seems feasible, that Muhammad works gradually towards completely renouncing the other gods and goddesses of Arabia as he moves towards a truly monotheistic position. Maybe that's the explanation. So perhaps there is something in this story. Even the writers of the time didn't quite know what to make of it. And later Muslims have really been mystified and mostly have said this is somehow should never have been in the text. That it's in the text, though, is interesting because, I mean, the original writers surely knew this was not exactly an Islamic thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
So it had some meaning in the text. Well, what Rushdie does is takes, incidentally, these verses are called the satanic verses,
yes.
The ones that tell about the appeal to the goddesses.
Mm-hmm.
And so, effectively, in the middle of the book, there is a kind of acting out of the story of what a possible scenario for Muhammad calling upon the goddesses and suggesting that it is truly part of a struggle within Muhammad's soul to decide between good and evil. And so the two figures in the story, the two heroes, well, a hero and anti-hero, are in effect two sides of Muhammad at that point in the book.
Mm-hmm.
Now, of course, it's a teasing kind of way to describe the life of Muhammad, to put it in a novel, in a fictional work. And though Rushdie has an Islamic background, he had ceased to be a practicing Muslim by this stage. And so he's playing with the kind of literary possibilities in the story.
Mm.
But it's not a declaration of this is the meaning of it. It's really an enlarging of this. Well, some have interpreted the satanic verses, that's Rushdie's book, about the struggle of an Indian becoming a person who lives in the West.
Mm-hmm.
And so the two sides of the two people who fall out of the plane are effectively two aspects of Indianness that has to take some shape in the world of English literature and English life. And so Muhammad and his story is simply one of the analogies that tries to make sense of it. So why issue a fatwa? And
It just seems completely over the top to put hit out on someone for a work of fiction. is there any way that this is a rational thing to do?
No, I don't think so. Mm. I think it is, of course, inevitably a risky thing to do to talk about the life of Muhammad and to talk about the more controversial parts. But lots of scholars are doing this increasingly.
Mm.
But I think probably the critical aspect in 1989, when the fatwa was issued, is that at the time, you know, Islam was coming into a huge period of opportunity which it hadn't had up to that point, so that the defeat of the Shah showed there was political power in Islam.
Mm.
And it seems to me that what was going on in Khomeini's mind when he issued the fatwa is that it is time for Muslims to start exerting their power and their strength against the godlessness which we are increasingly conflicting with in the West.
Is that the rationale behind them getting, I guess, so up in arms about this and putting a fatwa on it?
I certainly think that the 80s is the critical period when the West first really started to take seriously the significance of Islam. And the fatwa was like a tremendous shot across the decks of those who would dare to impugn Islam, as people had done very frequently prior to those days.
And do we actually know how Salman Rushdie is doing? Because he was obviously attacked a few days ago. Do we know if he's going to survive the attack?
Can't you hear the ambulance going by right this moment? It can't be good. But no, actually he is doing... He is, I think, doing quite well.
Okay.
Apparently, he's even been joking to people in the hospital. He may lose an eye, though.
Oh.
So that's pretty grim.
Oh.
But it's fire engines, not an ambulance, I might say. Yeah. I think, I mean, he wrote a lot during those terrible years when he couldn't come out of hiding, effectively.
Yes.
For the period.
But that's crazy. It's so crazy.
It is absolutely crazy and terrifying that people can be so destructive to make their own point. Destructive on anybody who doesn't line up with their way of thinking.
Yes.
I mean, if any of us, if we're all going to live in the future, we're going to have to learn to get along.
Certainly. All right, Peter, another very interesting edition of That's the Spirit. We'll look forward to catching up with you next Monday.
Splendid. Very good. See you.